Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Black Friday at BJ's Wholesale Club is so big, we called in the expert at paying less around the holidays.
Scrooge here. Past, present, or future, it's hard to beat the Black Friday deals at BJ's. Believe me, I've tried. Get 25% off select toys, 30% off select small appliances, and 45% off select TVs through December 1st. Plus, doorbuster deals Thanksgiving weekend. These prices are so good they even rattled out Marley's, Jane. Bah, humbug. Sorry, old habit.
Visit BJ's.com/Black Friday for holiday savings.
Hi, I'm Mike Dilk, and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family, and your friends. Each week, I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me with the Relax Back UK show this week. My first guest is an old friend to the show, Dr. Hilary Jones. Now, I don't think his plan was to scare me, but I have to say he did succeed somewhat. Can you figure out what the topic is?
A big report in the British Medical Journal last February looked at 10 million people in 45 different studies and collated the data, concluded that there were at least 32 adverse health outcomes that ranged from not just obesity and diabetes, but cancers, breast cancer, colorectal cancer, pancreatic cancer, anxiety and depression, asthma, inflammatory bowel disease, such as Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, metabolic disorders, to name but a few.
The topic is UPF. That is ultra-processed food. Then on to something a bit more cheery, Deaf Sport and the Deaf Olympics, with Chris Radcliffe, CEO of UK Deaf Sport.
And every 4 years we have the Summer Deaf Olympics, of which next year in November 2025 it will take place in Tokyo. We will be sending a team, all being well, of about 115 athletes and officials to represent in athletics, swimming, golf, tennis, men's football and women's football.
So please do stay tuned for a great show. Thank you.
This show is cool.
So our diets have undergone really quite a massive change in the last 2 to 4 decades or so. And I started off by asking Dr. Hilary Jones kind of how and why that is. You know, why our diets have changed so dramatically.
Sure. Well, you know, a few decades ago, I think people were much more likely to prepare food from scratch in the kitchen. They would have more fresh produce that they would prepare themselves, maybe cook in a batch for the rest of the week. But certainly they were less reliant on ready meals, pre-packed foods, convenience foods that they'd get from the shop or the supermarket that could just go in the microwave. These days, it's people are short of time. They spend less time in the kitchen and they buy pre-prepared foods, which are very convenient and appealing and palatable. The problem is that they contain a lot more of the additives which are used in the processing of food. When I talk about ultra-processed foods, I'm talking about foods which contain things which we wouldn't be cooking from scratch with in the kitchen, that don't you don't find in fresh, nutritious food. Talking about emulsifiers, about artificial sweeteners, flavours.
Right, let me just interrupt you there. Couple of things, really. Thinking back, so I'm 58. Going back to my mum cooking in the kitchen, she... Everything was almost made from scratch. And maybe at the time I thought, well, that's just how our family does it. But maybe many more families did the same. And then the other thing I was going to say, I've just lost my train of thought and I can't remember. It doesn't matter. Yes, what's an emulsifier? You said emulsifier. I thought, all right, what's that?
Right. It's something that binds food together. It's like a glue in food. So in bread would fall apart if it didn't have the emulsifier to bind it together. Okay.
Okay. And the emulsifier in regular bread, what would that be? Because bread is just flour, water, and yeast, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's a chemical like a glue-like substance, which is the sticky stuff which binds it together, and that makes it easy to prepare. It makes it sort of less of a mess, I suppose, than a whole grain loaf, and an artificial sweetener. You know what that is? It's many times sweeter than sugar, but far less calories, if any. There are flavorings and colorings, which are the E numbers that you'll see, and nutritional information on the back of packets. And all these things are designed to make food palatable and tasty and convenient and colorful and appealing. But it's got no nutritional value whatsoever. It's there to sell the public, you know, to encourage them to buy more of it because it looks nice, tastes nice. But we don't need those things in it. We can still have palatable, nutritious food that doesn't contain these things.
And I did actually see, I'm just going to interrupt if I may, I read this a while ago. It was kind of really trying to answer the question, giving some guidelines on what an ultra processed food is. And this, it was a book, actually, a famous book, but I can't remember who it was by because I've got a useless memory. Said if you look at the ingredients and there's something listed in the ingredients that you haven't really got in your kitchen, it might, you know, even if it's in the back of the cupboard and you haven't used it for years, it's got something that a regular kitchen doesn't have in it. It's probably an ultra processed food.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you, you know, you might think about a healthy breakfast. So, you know, can there be any harm done in having some cereals, which we're told are very healthy? You know, a slice of toast, which should be very healthy. And both of those are, you know, contain processed, they're both processed foods. So your cereal packet, you know, that cereal might contain quite a lot of sugar, added sugar, quite a lot of added salt, quite a lot of colouring. To make it look more attractive. Even a muesli, you know, might contain those things. Your bread, if it's coming out of a packet and it's been sliced, it's almost certainly been processed to some degree. Things like meats, sausages, ham that you get out of packets, prepackaged soups, tinned tomatoes, it's all been processed to some degree as opposed to fresh fruit and vegetables.
I'll just check in a family anecdote here. Over the Christmas holidays, my wife started to make some bread. You know, a bit more time, let's make some bread. Really nice bread. But after a day or two, it was mouldy. If we buy bread from, well, practically anywhere, but certainly from a supermarket, it lasts days. I mean, a scary length of time. And it made me think, what's the difference between these two products? Because on the face of it, they're the same.
Well, there are preservatives in processed foods, and you know, a small amount of processing is fine because it does preserve the shelf life of foods. I mean, sailors in the 18th century were using salt in barrels to store their meat in, to keep it bacteria free and to keep its shelf.
We need salt. If we don't get salt, we die.
Yeah, but we don't need nearly as much as we're consuming. It puts our blood pressure up and it encourages us to eat more and more salt because the taste is quite addictive. So we're eating far too much salt, for sure. So we don't need it added to foods. And we then add it at the table as well.
Yes, that's a habit, isn't it?
That's a habit, and we're getting a double whammy. I mean, some pizzas contain more salt than seawater, equivalent weights. You believe it? Yeah, it's true. So a little bit is fine, say preservatives, a little bit of emulsification, fine. But we don't need to have 60% of our energy intake from ultra-processed foods because that is associated with adverse health outcomes.
So effectively, because you mentioned that this has only really been happening for the last, 2 to 4 decades, 20 to 40 years. So in the scheme of things, not that long, really. You know, I'm 58, so... I still think it's not that long. So, sure. it's a big experiment, really. Do we really know what it's doing to us? What is this stuff doing to us?
Well, we do know now far more than we did. You're right. It was an experiment that went unchecked. And there's a considerable and significant body of evidence now that there are adverse outcomes to this. So a big report in the British Medical Journal last February looked at 10 million people in 45 different studies and collated the data, concluded that there were at least 32 adverse health outcomes that ranged from not just obesity and diabetes, but cancers, breast cancer, colorectal cancer, pancreatic cancer, anxiety and depression, asthma, inflammatory bowel disease, such as Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, metabolic disorders, to name but a few. And this was a massive analysis that is in consistent with many other studies that have been published. And that's why Gusto, the recipe box people, published this image of Michael, an AI generated image of what the average person might look like in 30 years time if we continue to go down the route we're going.
Yeah, I saw that and it horrified me. Not only because he's got the same name as me, which didn't help, but you know, so this evidence is certainly interesting, but I'm just sort of intrigued because, you know, when you test a drug, you really test a drug. You have one group of people who don't actually know if they're taking the drug or not, and another group of people the same, and you keep all the variables down to an absolute minimum, the only variable being whether they're taking the new drug or not. And so I'm just thinking, it's kind of impossible to do that with UPF. So is it really possible to really prove and really say this stuff is terrible for you or not so good for you, as well as stopping bread going off, etc.? Actually, can we really be sure it makes a health difference?
It's very difficult, as you say, to prove a causative relationship between ill health and consumption of UPFs. It's not easy to do that. The growing weight of evidence is pointing towards that. And there is a pretty good consensus amongst nutritionists, endocrinologists, diabetologists, heart specialists, that there is a definite link. And there was one interesting study that was conducted on identical twins who have the same genetic makeup. And they gave one twin the same ingredients in terms of the food groups. So protein, fats, carbohydrate, that were unprocessed, and the other twin had the same things, the same amount of calories that were processed, and there were measurable adverse health outcomes in the twin that had the processing of the food. So it's not just the ingredients of the food, it appears, but it pointed towards the processing itself had a detrimental effect. And that was probably one of the earliest studies that showed, hello, we need to be suspicious of the processing of the food that is actually causing part of the harm.
Processing, that's potentially a difficult word as well, because the bread that my wife made, you know, she processed that herself. You know, she mixed it and all the rest of it. So, it you know, we didn't have a pile of flour and yeast and water on the table. She did process it. So processing per se is not necessarily bad. It's putting in these extra ingredients, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've got unprocessed food, you've natural food, you've got minimally processed, moderately processed, and ultra processed. And you know, that's the worrying aspect, the ultra processing and the sheer volume of what we're consuming. I mean, you could say, I mean, for example, if we look at minimally processed foods, If you're making a bolognese, for example, and you're using shop-bought pasta sauces or tomato sauce from a tin, it's cooked tomatoes which have been processed. But if you were using a passata with herbs, that's uncooked tomato puree, which is strained of seeds and skin, maybe just add a pinch of salt, oil and vinegar instead, and you've got a much healthier tomato ingredient for your bolognese than you would have if you're buying shop-bought stuff.
That's a great example because, you know, yeah, most people are familiar with spaghetti bolognese, and probably most people at some point have made it, you know, so yeah, they're very familiar with that. Yeah. I suppose one of the things is a lot of this UPF is just so damn tasty. You know, it's nice to eat. So if very often, if we're not thinking about anything else, and we're just hungry, that's what we're going to eat.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why it's put in there to encourage us to eat more of it. I mean, the food industry isn't necessarily interested in our health. They're interested in selling their product. Mm. And one of the problems is that these things, because they're tasty, they're addictive. You know, we get used to strong flavors. So a lot of salt, a lot of sugar, a lot of fat.
Yeah.
You look at the nutritional information on so many bits of confectionery or even protein bars, you know, energy snacks, they are full of this stuff. And you know, it's Moorish.
Well, so I did a little experiment just now before we started, because so I had my lunch and it was leftovers from last night. And that was a homemade chicken soup. Really nice. And then I did what kind of many people will do. I had my lunch. I fancy something a bit sweet just to have a munch on. Okay, so I reached for a packet of biscuits. All right, I really like ginger nuts. I mean, who doesn't?
Who doesn't?
Because I knew I was going to talk to you, I thought, let me have a little look. And then, so once you've found the list of ingredients, and it's tiny, so I had my glasses on. I had to have good light. This is exactly what we were talking about. So I'll just mention a couple of them. And these are not things that I would find in the cupboard in my kitchen. Calcium, iron, niacin, vegetable oil, okay, palm oil, but I wouldn't have that. Glucose, fructose, syrup, molasses, raising agents. I suppose I might have them for baking. Ground ginger, might have that. We do a lot of Indian cooking. Lemon and ginger flavoring. So like half of those things would not be in my kitchen. No. Yet the fact is, I love these ginger nuts, you know, and if I'm not careful, I'm thinking about it now, so I might eat less of them. But easily this afternoon, I could eat half a packet.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you're no different from everybody else. And it's not it's understandable that people are inadvertently consuming a lot of this stuff. They're not going out saying, yes, I'm going to have a load of UPFs. They just happen to be in the things that taste nice and look good. Yeah. And
I after that, I took it a little bit further. I thought about the rest of the family. So my children are a bit older now. They're 20 and 14. But when they were younger, and if I was in charge of tea, you know, dads quite often are, it wasn't uncommon for me to do fish fingers and baked beans, something like that, which tastes nice. Kids eat it. And my thought is fish. OK, fish fingers, that's got to be pretty good for you. But actually, you apply the kind of rule we've just applied, and it's UPF by a long way. It's not like just UPF. It's right in the bracket.
Even the baked beans, you know, having roasted vegetables, really. But you've got to teach kids to enjoy that before they crave the taste of the stronger stuff. No, you're absolutely right. These things do taste nice, and there's nothing wrong with them in small quantities. You know, I mean, Gusto's recipe boxes will have no more than 11% UPF in their boxes, as opposed to the 60% that everyone else is consuming most of the time. So that's a really good way of getting to be sure that you'll get fresh produce, which is nutritious with all the vitamins and minerals and fiber that you need, that can still be prepared within 10 minutes, that can save you time, is not any more expensive than going shopping for these things and buying your ready-made stuff. And also teaches people how to cook. It comes with nice little recipe suggestions, and there's a wide choice. And I think for many people, this will be a growing and more popular trend.
I think certainly cooking from scratch, people are going to start doing that more, because it is cheaper, actually.
And you can cook in bulk, can't you, for the whole week. You can cook on a Sunday if you've got the time, and then you've got everything ready for the week.
Yeah, you absolutely can do. Well, you know, our family, we had chicken soup last night and we had it again for lunch. So that's not for the whole week, but, you know, it all helps. So our lunch was very quick. It was just warming it up.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't necessarily take a lot of time. It can be cheaper. Although sometimes it amazes me when I'm shopping and I do see UPF, like frozen pizzas, stuff like that, how cheap it is. I think to myself, how can they make a frozen pizza for £1 or £2? It makes you think, what on earth can be in it? Because it's some of the food seems too cheap.
I agree with you, and you know, you often pay for what you get is what you pay for, and you know, you a lot of the cheap stuff isn't particularly healthy, which is why there is a socioeconomic divide. There is a discrepancy, health wise, in parts of the country which are deprived. They don't have much choice. Every shop is a fast food outlet. You know, you don't see many fruit and vegetable stalls. You don't see many delicatessens. They've got little choice, and it's cheaper, as well as being more convenient. So we need regulation from government to subsidise healthier foods and options and make them more available to everybody.
Yeah, I think this topic could easily turn into a whole series.
It could indeed.
You know, there's more to it than you can have a 20-minute chat about, really. But if people are listening and they're thinking, crikey, you know, I need to find out more about this. I need to make sure I'm eating better or my children are eating better. Can we just finish with some good sources where there's, you know, good, unbiased information, good recipes, all the rest of it? Where can people go for a bit more good info?
Well, I think for scratch cooking, some really good ideas you can get from at Gusto Cooking. And you can go to the Gusto website, which is gusto.co.uk, for the report that they've produced, the image of Michael, that, you know, what people are going to look like in 30 years' time unless we do something about it. And if you want the full report at Gusto...
He's not a handsome chap, is he? I've just looked at the picture.
Look healthy, does he? He looks 60. He's probably 35. But gusto.co.uk/blog for the full report and Michael's images. And there's a health hub there too. So there's a choice of recipes. You can get health information, tips on cooking from scratch. And that's been their mission for years. So, you know, we just want to get the word out there and make people aware of healthier options.
Good. All right. Dr. Hillary, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to chat.
Nice to chat to you again, Mike, and Happy New Year to you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Black Friday at BJ's Wholesale Club is so big, we called in the expert at paying less around the holidays.
Scrooge here. Past, present, or future, it's hard to beat the Black Friday deals at BJ's. Believe me, I've tried. Get 25% off select toys, 30% off select small appliances, and 45% off select TVs through December 1st. Plus, doorbuster deals Thanksgiving weekend. These prices are so good they even rattled old Marley's chain. Ah, humbug. Sorry, old habit.
Visit bjs.com/Black Friday for holiday savings.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
My next guest is Chris Radcliffe. He's CEO of UK Deaf Sport. And as well as running the organisation, he's also very experienced at playing deaf sport.
That's correct. Yes, I'm very fortunate to have just recently joined UK Deaf Sport as the CEO. But I've also had a long lifetime of playing sport myself, as well as being an administrator and team manager. I originally swam, played water polo, and competed in the Los Angeles Deaf Olympics in 1985. And then went on to play rugby and represented the Welsh Deaf Rugby team in the first Deaf Rugby World Cup in New Zealand 2002, which we won. But then after that, retiring from sport, I got involved in the administration and I shifted mission for the GB Deaf Olympic team in Melbourne 2005.
Okay. What position were you in the rugby?
I play prop. I think you can see from the video, it's pretty obvious that I was a prop rather than a number 10. I jokingly say I was a frustrated number 10, but I was actually a prop.
I would say forward material.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Chunky, quite a strong individual.
Yes, correct.
I used to play hooker, so I relied on people like you.
Yeah. We looked after you guys.
Absolutely, yes. Anyway, look, really talking about really deaf sport in general, and for rugby actually, could a deaf rugby team play a hearing rugby team and have a good game? My initial thought is that would work quite well.
So first and foremost, you know, not many deaf people play rugby, so there are very few individual deaf rugby teams other than national teams that are representative of deaf players from their local club. So there is a deaf team now in Devon, Exeter Way, which has started to play matches against hearing teams, and that seems to be going very well. I and other players that I played with in terms of the Welsh Deaf team all play for our club teams, and we got together to represent Welsh Deaf team as deaf players. So in terms of deaf people playing rugby and sport in the wider domain of sport, you know, individual sport is often easier than team sport because there's less communication involved. I think the beauty of rugby is because the ball needs to be passed backwards, it's a bit easier to read the game than it is in a sport like football, which is much more 360 degrees and therefore more challenging for deaf people in the hearing team to keep up with the communication and the speed of the game.
Yeah. And I haven't played rugby for a long, long time, right? And, you know, it was only schoolboy rugby. But my impression actually was that actually at a reasonable level of rugby, it's about perception and awareness of your teammates rather than them shouting at you saying, right, I'm over here. You kind of, you're aware of where your teammates are and play like that.
I mean, that may be true, but I think what we need to do is go back to the fact that deaf children are half as likely to be inactive, or twice as likely to be inactive as their hearing counterparts. So it starts from an early childhood when your experience in participation in sport physical activity is already on a back foot. So a lot of deaf children from their experience find it hard to integrate and be included in mainstream groups and therefore may not feel confident about playing sport. Sure. And as a result, you know, you're talking on back foot from the start of your life. So you go back to the terms like perception and awareness, that's absolutely true. And in some cases, deaf people are actually probably more perceptive through visual understanding of what's going around them. But the challenge is if you haven't had access to coaching that you can feel you understand and you're included right from the start, it's a really difficult challenge to be an effective team player in team sport.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. So in general, deaf sport doesn't have such a, you know, a high people. I mean, people don't know about it. So I only recently learned that the Deaf Olympics kind of existed. So tell us about the Deaf Olympics a little bit.
Yes, absolutely. So the Deaf Olympics is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year and was first established in Paris in 1924, of which GB were one of the 9 countries that were founding members of the Deaf Olympic movement. It's the oldest disability sport movement in the world and was established long before the International Paralympic Committee. And every 4 years we have the Summer Deaf Olympics, of which next year in November 2025 it will take place in Tokyo. We will be sending a team, all being well, of about 115 athletes and officials to represent in athletics, swimming, golf, tennis, men's football and women's football.
Okay. Is it well attended? I mean, how many countries are involved?
So there's approximately about 8 countries will take part. There's usually about 4,000 athletes. So it's a big event. It's comparable with the Paralympics. The difference is that obviously we have 15 different sporting disciplines that take place. So deaf people have more choices through the Deaf Olympics and a range of sports that they can compete in.
Right. And but it is different from the Paralympics. Deaf people don't participate in the Paralympics, is that right?
That's correct. So for the Paralympics, there's no deaf classification. So to compete as a deaf person in the Paralympics, you would have to have a disability that your primary disability, whether that visual impairment, physical or learning. So though there's never been a deaf classification in the Paralympics.
Okay. But my experience is that, you know, watching sport of any sort at a high level really does encourage everyone to get involved, you know, have a go themselves. So is that kind of the same with the Deaflympics? So the fact that the Deaflympics happens, does that encourage other people to have a go?
I think there's a close correlation between deaf sport and the deaf community. You know, traditionally, in the old days, back in the early century, you would have seen a lot of deaf clubs spread around the country, and they were very much run by church mission groups. So that muscular Christianity approach to encouraging deaf people to be active through football, cricket, indoor games, bowls, snooker, all of those sort of things. And so the deaf community, by and large, was a thriving sporting community back in the day, although over the years, with the decline of deaf clubs and more deaf children being mainstream education, there's less of a deaf competition around in the UK. There's some football and there's some other sports, but what we tend to see is, in terms of the Deaf Olympics, is we're selecting the best athletes. So they will be mainly competing in mainstream sport events and activities.
So there's less opportunity now for deaf people to get involved in all kinds of different sports than there were a number of years ago?
Unfortunately, sorry, but this is part of our role at UK Deaf Sport to try and increase the number of opportunities. And we have seen some really good thing take off. For example, more recently we've seen the growth of golf among deaf people, and there's a thriving golf community among deaf people who play each other, and they found that important part of their social, emotional, physical well-being. We've also seen the growth of pickleball, which is an interesting one because obviously pickleball is taking the nation by storm at the moment in terms of a game that a lot of people are playing.
And yeah, I think you might have to just describe what pickleball is. I've heard of it, but that's about it. What is it?
So pickleball is an interesting sport. It's a cross between table tennis, badminton and tennis, and it's played in a badminton court size with a low net and a very light ball, which makes it harder to hit the ball hard. And it's played very much similar to how tennis would be perceived, but with a paddle rather than a racket.
Okay, and it's proving popular in some with some groups of people.
It is. I mean, we've seen lots of deaf people coming together to play pickleball. The main driving of that is really about coming together sociable, to be sociable together, and feeling part of something, a sense of belonging. So I think we look about the individual well-being of deaf people. Sport played a huge part in that, you know, not just the physical well-being, but the mental and emotional well-being. Many deaf people are very socially isolated as well.
Sure. I mean, in some ways, probably mental and emotional well-being is almost more important than physical well-being, you know, if you're part of a sports club and all that.
Absolutely. And, you know, I always go back to one of the quotes from a well-known deafblind woman called Helen Keller, and she talked about being blind cuts you off from things, but being deaf cuts you off from people. And I think that is the real challenge about deafness. Obviously, communication is the real challenge for a lot of deaf people, and yeah, therefore it's hard for them to feel part of something in their local communities. And it's also hard for them to have the confidence to actually come forward.
Okay. Let's go back again to the Deaflympics. If an athlete's in the regular Olympics, you know, there's lots of finance available and help with training, all kinds of stuff. Is there anything like that for the Deaflympics?
No, unfortunately not. We don't receive any official funding from the government or, you know, the lottery in terms of the Deaflympics. We rely wholly on voluntary donations, including sponsorship. And we're working hard trying to secure some sponsorship at the moment, although, you know, the budget for Tokyo next year is £500,000, and it's a significant amount of money to raise. We are, if we cannot raise the money, then the athletes themselves will have to pay their way to compete and take part.
Okay, so it's essentially it's going to be down, or quite likely to be down, to the individuals to foot the bill.
Yes, but we're also very strict about the criteria, qualification criteria. We're not just going to allow any deaf person to pay their way to get into the team. They have to perform as well and be of a sufficient standard. So we set the qualifying standards. And yes, unfortunately, if we cannot raise the money for them, then we ask for them to pay their way to be part of the GB Deaf Olympic team.
All right. If deaf people want to get involved in sport at any level, I'm not talking necessarily about the Deaf Olympics here, but they want to have a go at pickleball or whatever it might be, how can they do that? How can they find out about local sports teams, local ways of doing it? What's the best thing for them to do?
They can go to our website, UK Deaf Sport website, and look at the activity finder. There's a number of activity clubs and groups that they can find in their local area. They could ask their local active partnerships around what activities they have specifically for deaf people. And there are a number of clubs for different sports that have inclusive practice in place. You know, they may have a coach who has basic sign language skills or deaf awareness, and they will encourage and provide accessible opportunities for deaf people as part of a wider group. So really, it's a case of finding out what sport they want to do and then being signposted to the right activities in their local area. If they're in London, for example, there's more opportunities, but if you're in Cornwall, it's a bit of a challenge, obviously.
Okay, and if there's anyone listening, any companies listening who would like to get involved and sponsor the Deaf Olympics, you know, donate some money to this, how can they go about doing that? Who should they be contacting?
So they could contact us directly. We have an email address, fundraising@deaflympicsgb.org.uk. And we do have a sponsorship pack information available for companies who may be interested. But we also have a Just Giving account, which can be found under Deaf Olympic GB Just Giving. And obviously, any donation would be hugely gratefully received. And we are also very happy to talk further with any companies, larger corporate organisations who want to sponsor us in a larger amount of money. And within the sponsorship pack, we have different tiers of sponsorship and what we can offer in return.
Excellent. All right. I think it just remains for me to wish you the best of luck in the Olympics, and that Team GB gets loads and loads of medals. Have you got a plan? Have you got an idea of how many medals you might be coming back with?
Well, at this stage, you know, with all really huge number of medals, you have to remember that a lot of countries are fully funded by their respective governments. And so over the 20, 30 years, GB has dropped further down the medal count. But we are hopeful that we will win at least a medal in both the men and women's football, and maybe a couple of medals in the athletics and swimming. And we should certainly compete at tennis and golf. So all of our athletes that are going are within a chance of winning a medal.
Good. All right. Well, look, good luck with it. And thank you very much indeed for chatting, Chris.
Thank you very much indeed, Mike. Good to meet you.
Thank you very much to my guests on this week's show. And they were Dr. Hilary Jones talking about UPF, ultra processed foods, and Chris Radcliffe of UK Deaf Sport. Do remember, if you like the show and have liked previous shows, do buy my book, which is based on shows of days gone by, all the shows in the last year or so. It's called Cut the Crap, Ask the Questions That Matter About Your Health. And lastly, have a healthy week until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Black Friday at BJ's Wholesale Club is so big, we called in the expert at paying less around the holidays.
Scrooge here. Past, present or future, it's hard to beat the Black Friday deals at BJ's. Believe me, I've tried. Get 25% off select toys, 30% off select small appliances, and 45% off select TVs through December 1st. Plus doorbuster deals Thanksgiving weekend. These prices are so good they even rattled old Marley's, Jane. Ah, humbug. Sorry, old habit.
Visit bjs.com/Black Friday for holiday savings.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.